Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, hello, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. My name is Alex Q, and welcome to the fourth episode of Miscast. List less is list more. List less is list more?
They're getting worse, mate. They're getting worse.
I mean, they are getting worse. That is actually factually correct. This is the fourth episode in our short series where each episode, using the expertise of my superstar co-hosts and special guest, we will discuss tabletop topics that we hope will help improve your generalship, expertise, and enjoyment of your gaming experience. It's the podcast that will talk nonsense and sense in equal measure, and it's the podcast that's been looking at air conditioning quotations after arriving home literally drenched from travelling on the sauna that is otherwise known as the Victoria Tube Line. It's that kind of podcast. That's the sort of podcast we're doing. How do we find the heat, gents?
Oh, horrendous. I spend a lot of time in my bedroom, not doing the interesting things you should be doing in bedrooms, but I work from here. And to cool down, I've got to put my sink not my sink, my I'm getting Alzheimer's. What's it called?
A tap?
No, you put something plastic inside the sink. Washing up bowl. There we go. That's
wow.
How hot I am. That's how fucking hot I am. So I get a washing up bowl and I fill it with water and I stick my feet in there all day whilst I'm working.
Whilst it's in the sink?
In the bedroom where I work, where it's really hot.
Well, I tell you what, I wish I had that on the Victoria Line. So for those who don't know, I do work in two central London hospitals, and so I have to get the tube. And the Victoria, I think because it's really old, does not have air conditioning on it at all. So when I went to get onto it, you know, when you come, when you're going on holiday and you come off an aeroplane and it's really nice and air-conned and you've gone to a tropical country, you get hit with this huge wave of heat because you're going to tropical country. That was like the doors on the Victoria Line opening, and I was just sat in there, me and this one other guy. Literally, I could feel the moisture getting sucked from my body as I was just sat in there. And as the doors opened, I was like some sort of, I felt a bit like a tomb king, to make it relevant. I was like, just trying to like just get any sort of water into my body. It was so awful.
That's the noise I ever expected to hear from you.
What? My Tomb King noise. Yeah.
Tomb Kings aren't relevant, by the way. Sorry.
Dead book, dead game. Oh,
Don't say that. Tristan will cry.
Tristan.
And Sam from last episode. Yeah, shout out to Tristan and his Tomb Kings.
I painted three models in the hottest day of where, well, hottest day in history. Was it? Was it the hottest day in UK history?
Oh, yeah, you ran scared from playing me, didn't you, Owen? I remember that. I remember that.
Say what?
You ran scared from playing me, remember? We were supposed to play the game, and someone didn't turn up to the game, did they, Owen?
Oh, yeah, there was that. But no, so last week...
Did Owen forget you?
No, he was scared. He said he was really scared. He didn't want to play.
Yeah, so. I stayed home and painted. It was very good painting weather, to be honest with you. The paint dries so damn fast. You can work really fast when
it's literally just come out solid from the spray can.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to be careful. Yeah, but no. So I painted three Revenant Seekers last week, and
very nice.
More on that later, maybe. But
only three.
Only the three. Three is a tech piece. Oh. Absolutely magnificent unit. Unbelievable.
Is that what
unit.
We're calling it now? A tech piece.
Okay. Nine is the cream, isn't it?
We'll get on to that.
We'll get on to that. Yeah.
Yeah, we will. We will get on to that.
There was another voice there. Who was that, Alex?
There was another voice. But before we get to that other voice, that sexy tones, shall we say hello to the first co-host? As always, his sexy serenades are filling your ear holes all over the place. He goes by at Positive Victim on Twitter. It's Darren Watson, everybody. Hello, Darren.
Hello, lovely.
How's the Patreon going? All good?
Yes, I just told Matt that he's won the first list challenge. I wrote a Nighthaunt list that I got my patrons to all write the perfect counter to. And they had to explain why. And they get to play me on TTS. As their reward, which would probably actually be pretty hellish because I'm awful at TTS. But hopefully they'll smash me with their perfect counter.
I was going to say, Darren, is he taking a day off then? Or
fuck you, funny man.
I thought it was a very interesting and very relevant to this episode challenge. I thought it was very good. So
well, you were the judge. You were the judge. So thank you for.
Well, that's why I'm biased. But yeah, I thought just explain a little bit. So you wrote a Nighthaunt list that you thought was very meta, and you asked your patrons to come up with a counter. Is that right?
Yeah, basically. And then we can all the premise being we can all see various because everyone can read what everyone's done. It'll get people thinking about a meta-relevant problem and how you can solve it, and then also get people seeing other people's perspectives as well. So hopefully, we've all gained a bit of knowledge, and there might be people that don't even think about meta-relevant problems in their list building, which is where I tend to start, which we'll get into a bit later. So I'm trying to. One of the points of the Patreon is to help improve people's win rates and. The grassroots of that is list building, isn't it? So that's part of the every month we do a different list. This month is going to be KO. I've done a one drop KO list with the prime in. You'll be pleased to hear, Simon.
Oh,
spoilers.
I thought it was excellent, actually. What I will say, if the guys are listening who are in your Patreon, which I hope they are, I thought they were excellent, and I thought the explanations for every single one of them was very sound. So I thought it was, I thought it was really good. Pretty good job.
Sometimes just getting your thoughts out onto paper either help you, reassure you that they're correct, or you think to yourself, fuck me, that's a stupid idea. That sounded much better in my head than when I actually said it,
So
just getting people used to doing that, which is something I do when I'm building lists. I do all sorts.
Yep. Yeah, really good. Good job. So good job to your Patreon. And speaking of which, if anyone wants coaching and wants to join your Patreon, Darren, how do they go about doing it? #ad.
You can just go to Onwards AOS on Patreon, or there's a link in my bio in my Twitter.
So there you go. No excuses, people. If you want to get better at this tabletop games of ours, please do go and see Darren's Patreon. Right. Enough of me and you chatting, Darren. Let's get the sexy socked seductor himself in here.
Oh, very nice.
You can find him at Sweetly Sucked Socks on the Instagram.
Jesus Christ.
He's at OJ180 on Twitter. It's only the Owen Jackson. Hi, Owen. How was USA? USA. 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 That's how they do it, right?
That's exactly how they do it all the time.
Literally every time they do anything, right? They just start chanting USA. Right?
Yeah, it's bookended with three USAs every time. It takes ages to have a conversation with anybody out there. yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I think so.
And America was good.
America was great.
Tell the people what you were doing out there, other than chanting USA.
Well, very briefly, Rob Symes, Honest Wargamer, and intern Matt contacted
Shout
me.
Shout out today. To Honest Wargamer. Yep.
Honest Wargamer. They contacted me and they were like, oh, you live in London. We're going out to America. We need to fly from Heathrow. Can we come and stay with you? And I said, you know, when and what you're doing? And as it transpired, I was free. So I just grabbed a ticket and went out with them. And went on a little America Warhammer road trip. So it was great. Yeah. Flew over to the Summer Slaughter event, which is run by the Basement Wargamers in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, which was not New York or San Francisco, which is the only other place I've ever been to.
The only other American places anyone's ever been to, right?
Yeah, exactly that. but yeah, it was great. Flew in and had a little road trip down. With Noah. So yeah, I have played. It was a bit of a funny one. I kind of hadn't done any practice. I played two games with the new GHB, no games with my army. So I was kind of flying by the seat of my pants and felt a little bit of pressure because I don't know, I do this and I do some other things and people think that I'm okay at Warhammer. So I was a bit, oh God, I don't want to go over there and get wrecked. But yeah, the gaming was great. And I really enjoyed my games. I had some really tough games. Specifically, I'd like to shout out a game I had against Sam Gould, who I think won Adepticon with Seraphon a while ago with the old book. Do you remember that?
That's Sam, legend.
Yeah, man, really nice guy. But there's too many people to name drop. But yeah, essentially, it was just really nice to hang out with loads of like-minded people. And another example, much like Worlds or something that, you know, you can have, you know, This hobby brings us all together and it's just an opportunity to meet more people. So we had a big kind of clubhouse and every night there was like 30 or 40 people there partying and eating. And yeah, it was great. I had a wonderful time. I want to, as I've got the opportunity to shout out, Tough Crowd, Wicked Dicey, Season of War, the Basement Wargamers, and then specific shout outs to Noah and Joe and Jacob for the hospitality. Yeah, it was brilliant. And I played my trees and they're really good. So that was good. I went 4-1.
How well you did? Oh, right, good. You did mention it.
I won all my games on the first day, which was cool. I beat Marathion the Bow Snakes, Korn, which was Sam playing. And then in my last game, what did I beat on the third game? Oh, my God. Oh, Cities. So I was like, you know, 3-0 in. You know, Saturday night, 3-0 in, let's go, boys.
That's not becoming a thing. 3-0 in is not becoming a thing.
Well, I was 0-3 at the LGT a few years ago, and everybody bloody loved that. So I was gonna milk the 3-0 in. And then I played a bit too defensively in the fourth game and got smacked about by a really good Skaven list. And then brought it back and beat Fire Slayers in the last round, and yeah. It was. I just enjoyed. Yeah, enjoyed playing. I'm calling it the NP tree list. Sylvaneth, pure NP tree. They're awful. You just sit there going, "You can't unbind me because I'm out of range." Now I'm going to shoot you, and you can't do anything about it from 30 inches. And then I'm going to zoom across the board and teleport, smack you in the face, and then jump away before you get to hit me again. It's fucking awful, but it's really good fun to play with.
And you said my episode names were awful. Your This is after Beastler Claw and now NP Tree.
Yeah, but you know that's my shtick. I suppose we're having a battle over the worst puns. But no, so other than that, though, I got back, got into loads of work, and haven't really. I've got my army out, and there's a bit of damage, which is a shame. Those spindly trees didn't make it across in the flight too well. But yeah, great. Loved playing Warhammer with nice people. And
yeah, great. That's yeah, what that's I awesome. Got to say. Yeah, I saw some of the streams. It was really nice seeing the was it the charity stream with the guy finger painting his tech.
Oh my God, that was chaotic. That was really chaotic.
That was insane.
We made like $2,000 or something. People were able to like write in, I think Smorgan on the, who from our previous episode, he like donated like $80. And what you could do then is I was then running up to the TO and being like, right, we've just had two donations. Next battle round, at the start of the hero phase, each player, each of the teams has to roll a D6 and randomized, and one of their heroes gets Archeon's rules for that round, or like suddenly a purple sun is going to arrive, or it was, I think they got through one turn and then they called it because it was already about 3.5 hours long. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Lovely. But shall we get our lovely special guest intro? I think we should. Right. He has a Welsh shine, and I'm not very good at Welsh accents, but I guess I could try. We have an international superstar and GT winner for you. So don't say we don't have all the experts on the show, because we've had every single one of them has been a GT winner. So he is the list-writing mad genius himself. He's been described by last episode's special guest, Australian Sam, as one of his Warhammer heroes. It's at Sheephammer on Twitter and the current Team Wales captain. It's Simon Weekly, everybody. Hi, Simon.
Woo-hoo! Hello. Thank you very much for having me on.
And no
very
problem.
Kind, or mostly kind introduction. The first bit. Everything but the first bit was incredibly kind.
Yeah, but if I don't do accents anymore, people will just turn off. That's what they've told me. They've said they wouldn't listen.
Fans then, in that case.
Yeah, exactly. How's things, Simon? All right? All good with you?
Yeah, things are going well. Yeah, things are going very well. It's nice to be enjoying a bit of warmer weather, even if it is incredibly warm sometimes. But yeah, it's good. Painting Sylvaneth, painting Nighthaunt, painting all sorts of filthy army lists that I can think about.
And that's your jam at the moment, is it, right? Sylvaneth and Nighthaunt at the moment, is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, they're like two of the most recent new things, right?
So, the most cooked tomes.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair to you, you were saying off air just before we started recording that actually you're a changed man. And before in your 40k hat, you maybe would have just speed painted the stuff. But actually, you care a bit more about narrative and hobby. Is that right, Simon? Is that too far?
Look, if I'm going to be labelled as a narrative player, that can only be hilarious to the fans. Like, certainly, well, the community hobby standards are higher, right? So you can't, there's like a push and pull, right? You can't get away with just speed painting an army, because there's no real people turning up with speed painted armies except you. And the first time you do that, you're like, oh, right, next time, I'll be really embarrassed if I do that again. So I guess I have to learn to paint now.
Yeah, but, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think I've noticed as well that, not that I've been to loads of tournaments recently, but from the pictures and seeing that people's hobby stuff's really going through the roof. Like, some of the stuff is insane. I don't know if you saw some from the picture of Owen. Well, you must have seen it up close, but some of the American stuff was mad.
Yeah, honestly, it was the whole, like, I'm not really a big display board kind of guy. But yeah, there was a chap playing next to me and I think I might have made a misplay because I was just distracted by his army on the neighboring table. It was Bone Reaper themed Iron Jaws. I don't know if anyone saw that. He was a shop owner, supposedly. But yeah, the general hobby standard was off the charts. But I think, and it can't just be the lockdown, people coming out of lockdown, because everyone painted Gargants during lockdown, didn't they? I think maybe the democratic nature of like, information about, you know, hobby techniques and maybe the
community. Yeah, I don't know if it's getting more popular, because I've seen a few more celebrities in inverted commas getting involved in this hobby as well, like lots of people from the kind of League of Legends scene. Obviously we've got Henry Superman kind of plugging it everywhere, but it seems to be getting more popular, which is only a good thing.
Well, when I first met Simon, we went to Blood and Glory and we shared a room together, and he showed me pictures of some of the absolute abominations, sorry, Simon, on his phone from his 40K days. Glitter-covered Talos, plastic Chinese little toy motorbikes for his Gene Steeler cult army.
They never got used. The motorbikes, they were a step too far for the community approval.
You would have
managed to get on a table, but...
So yeah, I think big props to Simon. Definitely seen his hobby leveling up, which is dangerous because, you know, when he's really good at gaming, you don't want
blooming. Yeah, leave some for the rest of us.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, screw you. Right, that's a good segue into getting into the mind of Simon and the rest of you two. But before we get to the meat and bones of list writing, which if you hadn't guessed from my pun title, is the focus of this episode. So we're going to be focusing on all things list writing, how to write a list, how to practice writing lists, how to get better. But just before that, I just want to say thanks again for all the wonderful, lovely messages and support. And thank it was really nice for us to read them all and embarrass Sam as well with some of the lovely comments for Sam. So thank you again for all that. And thank you again for all your misplays. So we'll get to it, but it's a misplay section. Some of them sent in were absolutely fantastic. So thanks for those, and we'll talk about those later. But right, let's get into the most important subject to discuss, and that's... No, I'm not going to do the clocks joke again, but we will discuss clocks at some point, I promise. I promise we will discuss it, but not today. So, first things first, list writing. Simon.
Yes.
How do you start to write a list? How does it happen? Where do you even go from? Because lots of questions we got in before this episode were not just new people, some experienced people, that they struggle, they get some mind blocks, and they're not even sure how to start. So how do you even start preparing your lists, say, for a big GT or team tournaments? Where do you start? Where do you begin?
I like reading kind of for rules that look at all units or things that just look a bit like interesting, like something to catch my eye. And then I think it's a bit like scanning for the things that look really good. Like, this sounds like quite basic, right? But looking for things that look really good and then be like, well, is there a way to kind of excessively leverage like a concept or a mechanic? Like, this is not the only way to write lists. You can build like more complex machines and stuff like that. But, you know, a good example is like the Demon Princes, where you're just leveraging the fact that nothing can be seen to hide your whole army, or the Pink Horrors, where you're leveraging no retreat and wounds. And you're just like, well, you know what? At what point do I get diminishing returns from this unit? And it's probably not really ever, so I'll just take as many as I can. And sometimes you do, like melee units, sometimes you get diminishing returns a bit earlier because you can only fit so much in combat. But, you know, if you're just like, I'm going to stand on a marker and roll some gun dice, like roll some shooting, then, you know, you don't tend to get them very often. So that's like a good way in is like find something that, I suppose, looks powerful, feels powerful to you, and you have to kind of sense it in the game, or you can just like do some maths and just be like, okay, which is the most efficient output per point in the book? Like Deepkin are a really good example of that, because you can just quite quickly work out that it's basically sharks, and then you can just take 8 sharks.
And from a pure efficiency point of view, do you mean?
Yeah, you can be like, well, okay, I'm going to have 8 sharks, and that's like 70% of an army already. And then if you want, you can be like, I'll have an incarnate, and that's good, easy, or some other stuff. But
like
that's kind of a good way to I start thinking about lists often. It's like I'll read a book, I'll read all the rules, and something will like jump out at me. I'll be like, I wonder if there's a way to like really, sounds terrible, really break that, really like push it, like all the idolators with like Splintered Fang. And it's like, oh, you do a mortal wound on a 6, but you've only got 1 attack. Well, what if you could get 4 and you could reroll everything? Then you'd be insane. And I was like, oh, well, you can get 4 and reroll everything. So what does that army look like? And then you spend, you know, loads of the points on doing your thing. And then what you put around it is like dressing is like your kind of your tech pieces. So you can start thinking about meta stuff, or you can just start thinking about like, okay, well, if I'm pushing this like doom lozenge of snake warriors towards their army, if I don't want snake warriors to play objectives, I should have some other stuff to do that that sits at the back. So I have Iron Golems because they're the best unit at doing that, and so on. So
I love the fact you mentioned the Doom Lozenge, because I want to get into that. So remind me about what you mean by Doom Lozenge.
That's what I was going to say. It took 5 minutes for him to say Doom Lozenge, and I couldn't be any fucking happier.
The point of it, if you want, is like,
yeah, let's go into it now. Let's go. Like, let's go. Doom Lozenge.
It's like a fundamental archetype of army, right? So everyone knows like a gun line, right? You just stand there and you shoot stuff and you move backwards as best you can, and then you kill all this stuff and you take the markers. A doom lozenge is like a word for a castle, basically, but it's not about sitting in one place and having your screen set up and doing damage from it. It's like you put it down and you structure it and you have all your buff heroes in the middle, and it's kind of a lozenge because you end up going, it's like an ellipse, right, with two focuses that are basically the buff heroes, and then the rest of the buff heroes are in between those two, and then you can kind of make that Venn diagram of buff auras, if you like, and you just stick everything in that, and then you push it forwards, and it's a really good like list writing exercise to make a thing that people can't like, that does its thing better than everyone and just rushes to the center, like so Splinter Fang, a great one, because they outfight anything. Whatever they hit dies to them in combat. Hmm. And they're so cheap that they outtrade anything that tries to fight them back. Nighthorn are another great one. Mm. You can make, like, you know, there's amazing buff heroes in Nighthorn. You just put in the middle and you just have, like, then your units of choice, like your effective kind of melee, maybe some shooting, whatever kind of units in the middle, and then you just rush them. Thunder Lizard are the same. You have huge clouds of skinks, and then in the middle, you had, like, three curse heroes. And the whole lozenge was wholly within 8.5 of at least one curse hero. So you couldn't touch it anywhere without being in range for a curse. And that means you just can't play it. So it's just like building, it's like a mobile castle, you can call it, and it just rolls forward into their army. And if people aren't able to stop it in probably two of their goes, you tend to just smash into their army and it all evaporates, which is quite satisfying.
Yeah, and we see it, we're seeing a lot with Nighthorn at the moment, right? All the Blade Geist lists are very Doom Lozenge-y. Is that a word?
It is now.
Doom Lozenge-y. But going very quickly back to the start with your, when you mentioned about focusing on a unit. So you, for you, when you're reading the rules, it's kind of the war scroll that jumps out at you, or can it be allegiances, or is it, do you find yourself seeing like a war scroll and going, ooh, that's exciting to me. I need to build on that.
I think it can be just that, but it's quite often a combination of like one or two factors. You see like I'll talk about the pink horrors. It's a really simple list to understand. You have a load of pink horrors, a lord of change to do some spells and be a tough hero, and a change caster to spin cogs and summon loads and do loads of spells. And it's like, well, pink horrors are good wounds, but the issue is people can still play their game and just ignore them and just do loads of damage into them. Whereas if when you then say, well, I can also make them so you can't retreat from them, that's then, okay, there's a concept there. And it's like the Splintered Fang, you know, the War Scroll itself is not amazing, but when you think about the stuff you can apply to it. So read very broadly about the game. Try and read broadly about the army you want to play and the allies it can take and the things people do, the other lists that people play. So you've got a good kind of general background in what can link together, what kind of synergies are there, so that when you see a thing, you can hook on to, okay, well, I know that Wrathmongers exist and Blood Sequiturs exist and Aspiring Deathbringers exist, because I read the Corn War Scrolls the other day for, you know, for whatever reason. Fun. Let's pretend. Like 20 of the same generic rubbish hero to find like one that's any good. So it's like finding a...
So you find your unit and then you associate, see if your concept works, and then it kind of snowballs from there, kind of expands out on that concept.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Finding a concept that you can leverage very heavily, because there's probably like stronger than anticipated effects when you combine a couple of things together.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I like the fact you said scan as well, because something that Sam mentioned last episode and that people seem to love is this environmental scan that he mentioned. And it's the same sort of thing, right? You're looking at the meta and other people's lists, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, thank you. Really nice. So Darren, how about yourself? How do you start? Same sort of question to you.
I either start very similarly to Simon, and like you'll get inspired by something. Like a quick example would be when Slaanesh came out, and I came across the spell Slowful Stupor, which basically stops an enemy hero from charging. I thought, that's fucking brilliant. And then that led me down, well, how do I make sure that gets, you know, Slaanesh aren't particularly good at casting. So that's why I added Kairos, and then I added portals to make sure I could do it at range. And then it became a very good anti-Slaanesh list, a Slaanesh anti-Slaanesh list, because it could stop their heroes from charging and getting any value, and yours could obviously pick and choose where they go. And that, you know, that was just inspired by something that I really wanted to get as much value out of. The other way, quite often, is you sort of sit back and you take stock of the meta, and you look at the, I sort of call them meta relevant problems. So a good example would be when dragons first came out. You know, they can move in the hero phase and then move again, and they can spike all their mortals and do fuck tons of damage, and every bugger's going to get them because no one's original. I don't wow. apologise.
It's because I've got dragons, isn't it? That's why.
No. You got dragons after they were cooked, but they're a problem. So if you're not considering those in your list building when you know you're going to come across so many, then you're setting yourself up to fail. The current problems would be Nighthaunt. You know that their ability to terrify you and you can't inspiring presence is fucking bonkers, isn't it? Mm. So it's why all my lists at the moment, I'm swapping out Inspired, which used to be my go-to triumph for Indomitable.
So do you find for you, you're doing that scan first? So we heard from Simon that he obviously likes looking through the tomes and something might jump out. For you, and then he's doing the scan to see if that fits in. Are you finding you're starting with that and saying, right, X or Y is the problem, and therefore looking for something to fix X and Y?
I do both simultaneously because I don't stop thinking about lists. So it just depends what mood I'm in, I guess. Sometimes for fun, I'll just pick up a tome and try to make a list out of it. And then I'll try to make the best list I think that will do well in the current meta. And then you scan those tomes and you look for the interesting bits and you go from there. So it's kind of a combination of both. But I think I'm thinking about what tournament I'm going to be going to. You can take it a bit further if you, because we get a lot of information about events now, what scenarios are going to be involved, what house rules, if any, are going to be in play. There's a lot of information, isn't there, out there. So you can tailor your lists to the event and you can think to yourself, right, I'm going to see, and thanks to all the stats that are out there, you can see who's doing particularly well, so you know what the problems are. And if you know what the problems are, then you've got a good chance of solving them before the event, which is what I try to do.
And so when you've got that problem, your starting units that you're putting into your lists or starting allegiances will be focused on tackling that problem, or is it more of a kind of play style faction thing, which is what I want to ask to Owen and Simon as well. Is it just a unit choice and expanding from there, a bit like what Simon was talking about, or is it more kind of general than that?
I think it's I want to go into any game with at least some sort of plan, some sort of idea of what I'm doing. And I want to go into any scenario and I want to be able to walk up to the table and look at a scenario and look at my opponent and what my opponent's got on his list and already know what I'm doing. I don't want to spend too long sort of procrastinating about a plan. And this goes back to what I was talking about before in previous episodes, so that I can just watch what my opponent's doing and, you know, try and stave off that decision fatigue. And that starts in list. For me, that process starts in list building.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you find, last question before I ask Owen similar sort of questions, do you find that particular units get put into their lists first? Because, again, this is sort of going back to lots of the questions we were getting in private messaging about people just don't know where to even start with what units to go in. So do you find you're starting in, let's say, for example, the heroes, or are you starting with your battle line units, or is it very variable and it just depends on the faction you're playing?
The very, very start will be like, okay, I've got a concept, or a very, very basic concept. It could be I want to create a one drop list because I think that bounty hunters and, you know, expert conquerors, etc., isn't necessary. Having control of the first turn, choosing the proving ground, all that jazz is more important. And I like to feel in control because I don't like to give away the initiative. I like to have the initiative.
Yeah, you mentioned you're a proactive player rather than reactive.
I want my opponents making decisions from the off that I don't have to, if I can, because often I make silly decisions. So you start with that concept and then you sort of go from there. So you pick the units that feed into that concept the best they can. Sometimes a list just develops. With characters, I always like to be able to reach out and touch people. So I like to be able to attack people's support pieces and their not just their support heroes, but their screens, etc. So I will see what in any given faction, any given tome, what pieces are going to allow me to do that the best, the most consistently. You know, you don't just pick something because it can do something. You pick something because it can do something reliably.
It's back to that efficiency again, right? And we, again, off air, we'll go into it a little bit. But Simon and Darren have done a list challenge for each other. And we were joking that a very Darren piece is the prime. And that's got that similar, what you were talking about, reaching out and touching and affecting your opponent, getting the support pieces, right? So, that's a very you thing to write.
Yeah. So that's where I would start. If you've got no idea where to start, decide to yourself, right, I want to do this because of this. So I want, as an example, I want to create a one drop because of those reasons I've sort of mentioned, or I want to get loads of value out of bounty hunters. So go away and think about which units are going to do that and put those in your lists.
Yes, basically. Makes sense. Perfect. Owen.
Hi. I will caveat my response by saying that I don't consider myself to be much of a list writer. So I'm very pleased to be the filling in the sandwich between Darren and Simon at this stage.
You and me both. I can't write lists for Toffee, so you're all good.
So, and I'm not being too self-deprecating. Like, I know kind of the nuts and bolts of it, but yeah, having being friendly with some really excellent list writers, such as the two guests and people like Leo, and I don't know if Luke Morton writes any lists, but he seems to have.
He writes them all, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does write them all. Yeah, but even people like Team Wales, like Greg, always comes up with good lists. But anyway, I'm not here to name drop. But yeah, basically, I'm surrounded by lots of good people, so I think you'd kind of go into what the guys have said. I always like to have a core idea of, like, you know, okay, there's these, it's not normally just one unit. It's like, I see like a couple of units because I love my wombo combos. I think historically, Darren, you might've called me a pervert because I like to play like left field. I see what's good and I go, okay, cool. You carry on with your space lizards. I'm going to go and do this over here. So I think I'm just a contrary fucker, to be honest with you. And I do like to just sort of try and play something that's a little bit different. And then it's like, ooh, this is my thing. And there's nothing wrong with that. So if there are people out there and they're like, I don't want a net list, then that's great. You can stumble along.
The stealth. You want to find the stealth filth.
Yeah, but normally it's a pathway to frustration. But there can be goals.
Well, good things are good for a reason, right? Good things are good.
Exactly. Yeah. And we are, and especially in a world of battle tactics, now that we've gone to like 3.0, then I kind of have three watchwords for list writing now, which is basically, you know me and how I like my watchwords, Alex.
A good pun and a watchword, it's true.
I do. I can't help myself. I like synergy above all, like the big headline. If it was a shop front, it would be like neon light synergy.
What is Owen? Synergy and socks.
Thank God for the new tones.
Yeah, definitely.
Got synergy back. It was pretty dry at the beginning of three, wasn't it?
Well, so you were going to get some caps made, weren't you? Make synergy great again or something?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to do.
I think it's hit and miss on synergy and the tomes. Like, the flies don't have that much synergy, right?
Just
run flies forward. And maybe this would mean like early ones, but even like deep.
This is the Nurgle flies we're talking about, right?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, and Puscoil Blightlords. Sorry, I've been narrative.
Thanks.
As I apparently am.
As you now are a narrative player, yeah.
And like the same for like Nighthorn, I don't think is like massive synergy. There's not like loads of combos you pull off. You have like buff heroes, but I don't know if they count as synergy. Really, no. You know, like I stick my -1 damage guy in the middle of my melee army.
I'd count it as synergy.
Okay, fair enough.
You've got a good ally in Nighthaunt, being the corpse cart from Solbark Gravelords that's -1 wound. There's a bit of synergy with their allies as well.
So I've got a term that I don't know if I've ever vocalized really, but...
Ooh, here we go. I'm good. This is anticipation.
It's not that great. But I do like a synergistic fiesta. That's what I like. I like it when when it's absolutely popping off, because it's like, that works with that, but then if that dies, then they also synergize with this. And then, so for example, at the moment, a good example would be in many lists, Silverneth lists, you're finding the Arch Revenant, 120 points of absolute pure gold. I'm sure Simon would agree on this, having written. So an arch revenant with an arcane tome for 120 points is he's very much like you'd see like a rune lord in Cities. When you give the rune lord the arcane tome in Cities, he's just like 100 points of like pure synergy. You know, you've got lots of different ways that you can use him. He can do all sorts of things. And the Archrev is the same. So Archrevenant, very quickly. So this would be the, like, I would start here with the Archrev and some Kernoths.
So Archrev would Silver be your Air. Starting point for you. You'd say, right, Archrevenant.
Archreven Kernoths. Yeah, Archreven Kernoths. Because I used to run them in 2.0 together, and he used to give them, reroll ones to hit and a plus one in combat. But now the Archrevenant, he has a passive buff or a 12 inches, Holy Within, plus one to wound all phases. Brilliant. I'll take that for 120 points. That's like low tan or something. Then he's got a plus one attack in the combat phase, start the combat phase. And in some of the sub-factions like Heartwood, you've already got plus one to hit. So you don't need to give, you don't need to use all that attack. So you're not kind of like having to make a choice there. Make him the general even, and you get a Holy Within 18 rather than Holy Within 12. And then Arcane Tome gives him a cast, and then you put Verdurous Harmony on him, which is a spell. Obviously, he's got no buffs to casting but unless you put cogs in, but that's a cast on a 7, and you can bring one Kernoth back. So early game, you have your castle set up, and he can be the fulcrum of that castle, the center point, hidden behind some woods. And then he is giving off so many synergistic benefits to the rest of the army that I think that, you know, a little key piece like that can then let you branch out, because he's going to give you the plus one to wound buff for your bows in the early game. And then late game, when you want to push, he can go out and give plus one attack. And he can give the plus one to wound in combat. If you get Alfred or something, then he's there to give you those. He's a 12 inch flying move, 15 inches if you put the hive down. He can fight a bit. He's got a 4 up ward in combat. Just 6 wounds, which is great. Just protects him against, certain types of damage. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think definitely for me, synergistic combos are the starting point, and I always want to try and do one thing. I don't know if it's always
so. Yours is kind of a playstyle one, right? Because I know you mentioned in the deployment episode you like your, well, I was going to call it a castle, but now it's a Doom lozenge. Yes. You like your Doom lozenge-y lists, don't you?
I do, and then I like to then have the opportunity to react and break up the lozenge, at some point. I don't want it to all be based around just this one blob, the death blob or whatever. But yeah, that would be kind of from a like what Simon mentioned, where you have, you pick up a tome, or you scan through some of the new war scrolls, and then something sparks. Everything's based off, some kind of, you get excited about things, don't you? It's the new thing, and you find something. Or similarly, I think Darren and Simon are excellent at doing this. You go back, the landscape changes, and then you go back, and you're like, what broken shit can I find?
It's almost like you wrote my show notes, Owen.
Oh, really?
Almost like, because that was going to be the next subject. Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Absolutely.
I didn't read
them. Sorry, that's amazing.
So I think, I don't want to ramble on too much, but definitely the scan that we've talked about comes in again. So looking forward, looking back, looking around, you find that fun idea, you find that thing, because we play the game to have fun and also to kind of polish our egos and show how intelligent we all are.
What? Right? We don't play the game just to crush souls and ruin people's lives, no?
Okay. There's a lot of ranking off and showing how intelligent you are. And
yeah.
You can't deny that. So finding these interesting ideas and then making it your own, that's very much like that's something that I like to do.
Yes.
Even to the detriment of my results, perhaps. And then I would say the scan element would be on, you play for the pack. Darren mentioned, we have the opportunity to write for particular battle packs, but even the overall Galette battle pack that we're in now, there's a reason why people are taking KO. There's a reason why people are taking Heart Renders. There are a reason why people are taking Tree Revenants, because, barge through enemy lines, desecrate in a game with 5 battle packs, you can kind of lock in 2 to 3 without any interaction with your opponent. Then that's massive. So I think it was actually Math Mallow mentioned it about a year and a half ago on another podcast or something. He was like, I write for the battle packs all the time. All I want to do is not do anything. I don't want to fight. I don't want to go anywhere near my opponent. I just want to score 5 battle tactics and win the, and get my grand strategy and win the game.
Coward.
Yeah. But it bloody works. Yeah. And I think
it works. Very, very good play.
You can, so I think that you have to you have to get this balance between coming up with these ideas and ways that you want to impose yourself on the game, but then similarly, making it so that you can knock down these battle tactics, because the games are going to be very tight now. I think this pack is even tighter on the scoring.
Locking
in your tactics and your strategy. That would be my starting point. And I would just say as well, no fat. There's no room for any fat in any list. If you're like, oh, I'll just chuck this guy in or this endless spell, it's like, no, think again. Because
not now.
No room for fat in 2K lists. Absolutely.
Yeah,
agree.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just had two comments before I go on to Simon and talk about this kind of going back and assessing bit, because there's a bit that Simon put in our chat that's really nice that I want to get into a bit. But just before we go there, Synergistic Fiesta is going to have to be on socks when we hit 500,
okay,
number fine. One.
I'm waiting. I'll start the design tonight. Don't worry.
Sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it?
And second point, you pronounced it galette.
Yes.
Which is going to cause some ruckus on the internet, Owen.
Oh,
because
Jesus,
there's a whole pronunciation rucket out there. How are we saying, are we saying galette? Are we going galette?
It's Galatian, isn't it?
Is it? Galette?
I thought it was Galat and Galatian veterans, but
Galatian mush. That'll do.
Galatian, mate. we're not going Galician like the French.
Okay. What about let me win this game for once? Come on.
Oh, dear God.
I'm drinking tea.
I'll stop talking now.
Right, Simon, get us away from this nonsense. What I was talking about when I wanted to get into to ask you specifically, you wrote in our WhatsApp chat about your assessment of your list. So you've got your concept, you've got your units that you're starting off with, and you're trying to build that concept to take into your tournament. And you wrote this really nice list. I don't know if you have it to hand or if it's in your mad genius brain of yours, but how you're assessing that list, how it goes on to, how it goes into, how does it match into a one drop? How does it do X, Y, Z? Do you mind just quickly talking a bit about that? Because I think it's quite interesting.
Yeah, sure thing. I wouldn't say like I've held this as like a concept for a while, like in like actively as a defined thing, but it came about when I was thinking for this podcast. And I was like, well, really, if you're trying to explain to somebody what your list is going to have to do, it's going to have to go first sometimes. It's going to have to go second sometimes. It's going to have to get doubled from turn one into turn two sometimes. And it's going to have to take advantage of doubling someone from turn one into turn two as well. And it's going to have to play games where nobody ever gets a double. So for each of those five things, going first, going second, doubling and being doubled, and there being no double turns, you need to think about, does my list need one of those things to definitely happen all the time? Because they won't all happen all the time. They're deliberately contrary things. And that's a nice, like, checklist to think about, because there's loads of people who play one drops and they go, okay, well, my plan is I'm going to give away the turn and then I'm going to double one to two and I shoot all this stuff off. You go, okay, right. So you've deployed, you've got your screens, you've given away the turn. I've rushed you and I've killed all your screens. You've got one go and then we have a prio. And if I get that prio, which is more likely, 58% not to have the double, you instantly lose. So your game plan is a 58% loss game plan. And that's like, because you don't have a plan for what you do. So instead you build a list that goes, okay, well, if I don't get the double then, maybe if I get the double two into three, it's fine. But there are going to be games where that never happens as well. So can you, I go, you go, outscore and outfight your opponent is like a key thing. So it's like, and also you need to just be able, okay, well, if I'm a one drop, they could be a one drop, and then it's a roll off to see who is actually a one drop and who has deprived themselves of all the other battalions for nothing. And then,
Go on.
And half of those games, so you have to understand, okay, well, if my plan is to give away the turn and then go second once they've had a go, what do I do if I need to go first? How do I play? And then, following on from that, how do I play so that not only do I go first, I then get doubled one to two? Does my list have the ability to play like that? And if it doesn't, then it's not going to win every game and it's going to fall apart at the seams more often than you would like, generally.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And as you're, are you doing this assessment of the list you've got after you've built it, you made it, or are you doing it as you're doing it, or is it a bit of both?
So I think there's no point doing the assessment before you've worked out how to spend about 1,500 points of your army. Like, you need the core concept that is, like, fundamentally good at Warhammer, which I kind of think of as going there and doing damage, or at least doing, like, taking off my opponent's stuff and being able to stand on markers. And at least 1,500 points, they can just do that really quite well, quite effectively.
So you're looking at output and objective.
Yeah, exactly. So in a Sylvaneth list, you might have, like, a Lariel, two units of tree revs, and some hunters, or any of the new units that do brilliant damage from anywhere. Like, and you say, okay, I've got 1,500 points kind of done, that's fine. And then it's like, okay, well, what do I do in each of these scenarios? And okay, maybe I need a few more points than I otherwise would have planned. Like, Gossamid Archers are a brilliant, brilliant unit for this kind of thing. Because, okay, well, if I have to go first, I can stand out of range on turn one, but I can't be so far away from you that if you get two full turns of moving as fast as you can, you can't charge me. Because if I do that, I just lose. It's what you talked about on deployment the other week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll put Gossamids in the list because I can make sure you can't charge from turn one, but then turn two, all you're going to do is hit Gossamids, and on a 2+, you do nothing. And then if you don't double me and I get the turn, they're at the front of the army able to do damage. So I don't lose anything from having them there. You could roll a one and they could die, but then you lose 200 points rather than like 2,000. So
yeah,
that's like a good example of a piece that you might write a lot of the list and then think, okay, well, how do I do these things? Okay, well, I'm going to need something that does that. And it could just be like big unit of 20 dryads, another option. They're -1 to hit, -1 to wound. They just go in between. I don't really like them because their main job is to like be hard to kill. And the game is so lethal these days that, oh, you're hard to kill. You right? Well, it's dead. Like 30 pink horrors is no longer a meaningful challenge for most armies, and maybe that's like a thing to add to the checklist. And there's meta relevant problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to be really clear what you're like screening with is like both hard to kill and you can afford to lose it, because like the 30 blade geist unit, you know, it's a really popular screen. You put -1 to hit. It's got all out ghost, which I love as a term.
All that ghost is amazing. Yeah.
So you okay? Well, that's 30. I've got to do 30 damage baseline, but then it's four up hard save, so 60 damage, and then 5 up ward, so 90 damage. But most lists now look at a thing and go, okay, 90 damage. Yeah, I can do that. Like if I put 2,000 points in, I should be able to do that. And so, does it lose you the game if someone puts their whole army into a quarter of yours and takes it all off? That's like. So in terms of screening, and if the answer is yes, then you can't screen with it.
Yeah.
Because it's a critical part of your list. But if the answer is no, you're happy to, because behind that, you've got, say, I don't know, 8 units of hex wraiths. They just slam into whatever.
I love the inflection in your voice there.
Yeah, just a casual 8 units of hex wraiths. Yeah.
And then they slam into like 2,000 points of your opponent's army. You then win. So in that case, Blade Guys can screen. So it's not like this unit can always or can never screen.
Yeah.
Then, like, what's my, in the list, what am I designing the bits to do in the scenarios? And what's quite challenging when you're writing a list is understanding that in different games, different bits will solve different bits of the plan. That's, even now, I sometimes have to like, I can't just do it on the fly in my head. I have to like properly sit down and be like, okay, so against some matchups, I will carry them with the same list. Those Blade Geists are going to screen. And against other matchups, I'm going to rush them with 5 Hex Wraiths and cage them in, and the Blade Geists are going to play the middle of the board, for example. And they're going to be the damage dealer. So that's like, yeah, I hope they're going to make
challenge.
As you're doing the kind of tests for your army, understanding that in each of those scenarios, you've got something, but it doesn't have to be the same piece every time.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
We get that with experience as well. And it's why I champion using all sorts of shit in your practice games, not just your lists that you're going to be running, so that you can develop that skill where you can walk up and you can think to yourself, oh, I'm going to use this piece of my army to do this job that I wouldn't normally do or have never thought of doing it this way before.
And then so you almost have to like play Warhammer in your head when you write lists.
Mm.
And like single player TTS is good for that, but you have to like think, okay, imagine I go up to the table and I see this big Blade Geist Doom Lodge, the kind of popular thing. It's like, you know, 2 units of 30, all the buff heroes in the middle, it's minus on damage and melee, it's a real pain. What do I do? If that hits me, do I just lose? How can I have it not? Like, what pieces could I use in my army? Because when you get to the table, you can formulate a plan, but you may have brought stuff that doesn't give you a feasible plan. So the thing to think about is how many things can I think about and then kind of design in? Like, how many options can I design into my list so that I've got a plan for the broadest range of things possible?
Yeah.
And the things that I choose not to have a plan for are either like so bad that I don't care. Like someone takes like an army of Blood Reavers and you go, oh, well, look, I don't have a plan to kill 25 individual units of 10 Blood Reavers. No, but I'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it's just so like specific and you think, oh, okay, well, you know, who's going to play 4 Khorne Demon Princes, right? That doesn't really play in that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very niche, but it's so you can consciously decide, you know what, if I play this really niche army that's nevertheless good, it might beat me. I can't make a list that's good enough to shut down every option.
Yeah.
So the ones that I leave as, you know, paths to loss, if you like, the options that I leave open there are as narrow as possible.
Yeah. And in a tournament, it's that kind of meta read, right? You're looking for the common things you're going to hit. Because if you tailor against those 4 demons and you hit the Nighthorn Doom Lozenge every game,
Like you probably now need a plan for Sylvaneth because they're pretty models, so everyone has a collection or isn't afraid to buy one, and they're really good. And they're going to be strike and fade is like bananas good.
Yeah.
You plan for that. You need a plan to kill a load of ghosts that are -1 damage in melee and -2 wound and all of that kind of stuff. You still need a plan for what happens if Bellicor and a bunch of like tough demons show up or kind of flies, that kind of standard DPS check kind of thing. And probably like a couple of other bits and pieces, but the game's quite open, right? You probably need a plan for Deepkin as well. Like, what am I going to do if an army waits and then rushes me and fights with everything all at once?
Yeah.
You can't solve every problem as well, can you?
So don't
drive yourself mad doing it. Try to look at if I look at the sort of top 5 factions that are doing very well, I always think to myself, right, I'll concentrate on the 3 and the 2 factions that never win. They win, like say for example, Legions of the First Prince, that wins quite consistently. It's a very, very good list. Very, very good faction, but doesn't win big, does it? It's, you know, those more control armies that don't have mass output. They tend to win, but they don't win big. You don't, if you can try and hit the ground running, you don't necessarily ever have to worry about the Legions of the First Prince because they won't catch up with you, depending on how the packs run, obviously. You know, if it's just a straight 20 for winning, 17 for doom, etc., that isn't going to cut it. But you don't need to you worry less about the tech for those factions than you do the top 3 that you know win and win big, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And it's designing that core bit of like output and objectives that is very difficult to interfere with its plan. Like Sylvaneth, again, are really good at like, this is how I play the game. I set up a forest from outside Unbind range, like I as a faction, you know, and then I'll move my stuff near it and it'll all be automatic and you can't do anything about it. And then I roll all my dice for damage and then I go back and I reset totally.
Yeah.
And you don't really have a way for that not to happen to you unless you really, really consciously think hard at the game.
One thing I'd say, Simon, and it's a question to you both. I'm sorry to steal your thunder, Alex. I know you normally ask the questions here.
No, but please. I'll sit back, relax, go for it.
So, I mean, listening to you both talk, there's a lot of there's an element of a lot of practice and testing that goes on. And I think definitely when I came into the game and listening to people, they're like, "Oh, yeah, I took this list and this didn't perform. These are shit. I'm going to drop this unit and take that other unit." And there's a lot of chopping and changing. And in a game with so many variables, like how much emphasis do you put on testing and also going to the idea of like knowing which units can be your screens in certain matchups and, you know, having the flexibility and it's like list confidence almost, isn't it? You're like, okay, in this thing, I can sacrifice all my tree revs as long as I keep my bows on my sides alive or, you know, et cetera, there are ways and it's all about confidence in the list and then understanding the way that your army plays and the win condition, like how much sway do you put in testing or do you just think put it on the table and go for it?
It's a really good question and my answer is probably not going to be the one I'd like recommend to people, but I play a lot of like theoretical Warhammer in my head when I think about an army. Like I'm lucky enough to have been playing for a really long time. I wasn't one of those like kids who got cool and had a break and they came back to Warhammer. I'm like, you know, like
you didn't have the uni break. There was no uni break, Simon.
Not even, no. My minis are in a case under the bed.
See, looking at it now as a 40-year-old man, like that's the coolest thing I can think of, to be honest with you. Like no break, I'm cool as fuck.
So a lot of lists that I'll take to events, I will have played at most one game on the table because it's nice to push stuff around and like remember that physical interaction kind of on the table between like ranges and distances occurs. But most, so if you have the chance to test and play and practice, do, but know the limits of it, which is that every game you play is like a random event from a distribution. And it doesn't tell you the whole distribution. It just tells you that that event is within the bounds of what's possible and what's like reasonably likely because it happened at least once. But if you like some things you can just work out and know are good. So you can work out, okay, well, if I have 8 sharks, I know that's 32 shots at 3s and 3s, which I then know is about 14, I would guess, saves. So 28 damage at rend 1 I do from range every turn. So then I can look at the number of wounds you have in your thing and I don't need to worry. Oh, I haven't tested whether or not I can kill 10 wounds of 5+ save. I know I do 28 damage on average. So I've got a really good likelihood of just killing that 10 wound 5+ save unit, for example. If you do that kind of theory test, like theory evaluation of output and stuff, you can focus in the games you play on the things you actually need to test on the board. Because do my guns kill that hero from 30 inches away is a thing you can just like sit down with a pen and paper or a spreadsheet and calculate. But can I screen my army effectively enough with only 2 units of chaff, or do I need a third, is a kind of thing that you do want to test in a game.
Yeah, because I remember you came away from the recent tournament in, I want to say, Bournemouth or East Bournemouth.
Yeah, that's
Bournemouth.
Right.
And you had some ideas about the tweak because you went in there pretty with your Alariel list. You went in there, you know, kind of, okay, these are my 5 games. Let's see what this list does. And then you came away. And do you normally find that it's that sort of 300 points or something, which is the sort of flexible area that you're working in, like the to make those changes?
Yeah, definitely. Either the wheels come off at a certain point and you've just pushed it and it can't go further, or there's headroom to make changes. And that's generally the sign of like a really strong tome. Like Idolator's list is a good counter example where I went 4-1 the same way because I ran into 4 armies that tried to run into me and lost. And then I ran into a gunline army that shot me off. And I thought for a while, is there any way could I take some chariots and they move quickly? And it's like, no, you can't. If they can shoot you off, they just shoot you off. With Sylvaneth, it's like, okay, well, if what I need, for example, is Archaon not to be able to hit a unit of hunters, Grossomids are brilliant. Because on a 2+, Archaon does nothing every single turn.
So you're assessing those that list and making tweaks, which sort of... And this is kind of interesting to me because obviously some people that we speak to a lot, like yourself, Simon, and I guess Leo is very similar in his list writing. It's very statistical, I would say. It's very mathematical. And so that's why I'm quite interesting to hear from kind of Darren as well about his, because I'm going to suspect it's ever so slightly different, Darren, you're assessing your list and like you said, when you're just chucking stuff on the table, see what it does, right?
Yeah. to answer what Owen said there as well, I do exactly the same as Simon. Quite often my first game with a list is game one at an event. And I do a lot of playing in my own head, which is terribly sad. I don't just throw things down and see what's what on the table though. Beforehand, I will have you can do all the stats, you know, you can do all the calculations. But what I tend to do is just run through my first hero phase. You know, I imagine playing the game, but physically with dice, and you get to see that things don't work out quite as you'd visualized them on the paper. So I do that. I think to myself, right, I've got this problem, and these are the tools that I've acquired to solve that problem. And then I will see if they do fix that problem. And if I roll it out 10 times and I only achieve it 3 times, then that isn't a plan that's worth implementing, unless you're completely up against it. You have to recognize when you're in a really, really bad matchup and you're in a tight spot and you need to push your luck.
Yeah.
You know, don't just have plays and plans and ways to achieve things, but you need to know when to do them and when to not to. But you won't have any of them if you haven't thought about them before the game or you haven't, you know, practiced. It's much easier to retrieve a plan that you've thought about before a battle, before a game, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So I'll think of after a list has been done, you know, done and dusted, it's created, I will then spend a lot of time thinking about how many plays can I get out of this? What can this do so that I don't just have to make it up on the fly? I do obviously have to make a lot up on the fly because there's only so far that Theory Hammer will get you. But yeah, try to create a plays book, I would sort of suggest. Yeah.
And that sort of links into the lovely challenge that you've done for your patron that we were talking about at the start, right? Where you were, do you think that's a good practice tool for people, is to have an objective to write against, to get people used to writing lists, writing objectives?
Just get people thinking, just fucking think, like just think. this is the danger of people that, I don't have any issue with people that netlist, but what you're not doing is thinking for yourself. So you're never going to develop any list writing skills unless you start writing your own lists. What I'd suggest people to do is when a new faction tome comes out, don't consume all the content that's out there. Don't get anyone else's list ideas before you've seen the tome yourself. And then you go through it and you come up with your own ideas and then check against other people and see if you're finding the same stuff. And you might think to yourself, oh, brilliant, that, you know, that fantastic content creator's got the same idea as me, wonderful. Whereas if you just waited and watched that and stole that idea, then you wouldn't have that, you wouldn't have any of that confidence. Thinking of your own idea and implementing it is so much more satisfying than copying someone else's. And it's so much better for you. It's the longevity. There's so much more longevity in that, I would suggest.
Yeah. And so that might be a good practice for the listeners to think of that kind of meta list, as it were, and see what you can come up with to counter it, a bit like your list challenge. I think that's a really good idea. That sort of leads us into our sort of examples, because you both wrote lists for each other, which I think is fascinating. So Darren, should we start with you for Simon, and you want to kind of explain the process that you sort of went
the
through?
The rabbit hole that I went down. Yes. I came across, so I, when I first thought to myself, right, I'm going to try and write a sort of Simon style list. I tried to imagine, what does Simon really appreciate? I mean, I think, Simon, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's efficiency. It's just
spam.
Spam works because it's
characterization.
That was the problem with early Age of Sigmar 3 tomes, wasn't it? That the where there was a lack of synergy, all the value was on the war scrolls. So then it was incredibly easy to just see which scroll was the most valuable and then just spam it, which is why you see spammed lists, because it's also very obvious. Whereas now with Sylvaneth, I think a lot of the value is off the war scrolls, which is great, which is why you see, hopefully we'll see more varied lists, etc. So that's how I imagine sort of Simon to be, a very efficient, you know, he likes to come up with a plan and know that it's got a really good chance of succeeding, I think. So then I thought to myself, right, I want to apply that to a list concept. And in this case, it was a one drop, harking back to what I mentioned earlier, you know, that I don't think that we need bounty hunters. I don't think we need expert conquerors, let's say. Yeah. I think the real juice is the control. Maybe that's because I like to feel in control in a game. But I like the fact that, you know, having control early doors allows you to potentially get up early, and then the pressure's on your opponent, and that's how I sort of like to play. So I'm not necessarily trying to write a list for Simon to use, but I'm trying to use a Simon-esque process to write a list that I would use.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Cool. So I started there. So I thought to myself, right, I want to do a Cities of Sigmar list. I want it to be a one drop. And this is because there's so many units in Cities of Sigmar that I can use a bit of Math Hammer, which is obviously something else I think Simon's very proficient at. So it's a very deep tome that's got loads of different units in there for me to sort of explore. And then I want to use, rather than just do very basic math in my head, which is what I tend to do when I'm doing my own stuff. Oh yeah, that'll do about 3 wounds. Or if I do this, they'll do about 5 wounds, and add it together, that's 8 wounds. You know, I wanted to be a bit more scientific than that. I sort of did a bit of research or looked into Math Hammer sites, Age of Sigmar sites. And I come across this one, AOS Stats Hammer Hero Corp. UK KU app, whatever.
Oh.
I don't know if you know of that one.
Yeah, never heard of it.
Yeah,
really easy to use. Really easy.
Surprisingly, I've heard of that.
Did you make it, Simon? Is it your site?
No,
I don't even know what you guys are talking about, to be honest with you.
it's a stat hammer slot. So you can put in the stats of your list, your units, Owen. And it will show you how many average wounds it will do to a 2-up save, a 4-up save, a 3-up save, etc.
Oh, I like just doing the old style, like you were describing. I just like rolling it out.
When
I
was rolling out, writer.
Rolling out.
We're doing it Simon style, right? We're being a bit more scientific.
I think the great thing about like stats sites is especially the ones that show you, and I think the one that JP Gannis runs, I think it's his one, is really good at like, what's the probability I do at least this many wounds.
Yeah.
On average, I'll do 6, but I know 80% of the time I'll do at least 4. And that's a really powerful pair of stats to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Right, and this site will do that as well. You've got your average damage, and then you can see the...
Oh, brilliant.
The simulations. That's the tab you can do.
Full approval.
Lovely. And in here as well, you can add every buff that's going. So, and you can add every buff for your opponents as well. So in this instance, I thought to myself, right, so I want to do this, and I want to solve a meta-relevant problem, which will be Nurgle Flies, or Nurgle Flies with their 4-up save and their 5-up ward save. And that actually is quite similar to Nighthaunt, because they've got a 4-up ethereal save and they can get a 5-up ward save, can't they, with the command point?
All-out ghost, yeah.
Yeah, all-out ghost. can it go up to 4-plus with Nagash? Is that something? Is that a thing?
Yes. Yeah, I think you can.
Okay, so but then you'd have less troops if you had Nagash, so perhaps it would even out. I mean, I'm not going to go that. Well, I'll probably go. I've only had a day to prepare this, so
writing on the fly, it's perfect. Yeah, it's great. Yeah,
exactly. So I want to try and max. So the challenge to myself was to write a one drop Cities of Sigmar list that kills as many Nighthaunt through a 5-up ward save or Nurgle Flies with etc. And the thinking being, if I can kill sort of 3 or 4 a turn, then that's a pretty decent. It's a pretty decent list. I also want to be able to do it at range. So this is important because I want to, going back to what Simon was saying, when you're making plans, I want to be able to threaten someone and then potentially lose the priority role and then not lose many pieces in return. And then I can leverage all my firepower at them again. So it's got to be super mobile as well. That was the premise of it. So I've now got my premise. I've now got my goal. So I then set about looking at which cities would be the best, and it's clearly Tempest Eye, because the command trait Hawkeye gives you +1 to wound in a little bubble, but it's quite a significant bubble, but the markup on damage that's done if you get +1 to wound is significant. You can get plus one to wound in Hallow Heart with a spell, but it's only that's only one unit, and we don't want to put all our eggs in one basket. Or at least I didn't want to. So obviously I chose Tempest Eye. Tempest Eye does come with plus one armor save and plus three movement, so it also leans into my want to be able to stay away, have a massive threat range, and also you'll be a bit more survivable than anyone else. And you can coalition in KO units as well, which is very good. And obviously Stormcast, etc. So the first thing to do was go through all the various troops, and I want to see how many wounds I can do per point spent, and try yep. and get as much as I possibly can, because I think that's how Simon would go about it.
Yeah, I have those spreadsheets for yep. most armies I play. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Okay. We're on the right. So this is where I ended up. So I started with. I knew that I was going to have, you know, a very basic sort of, the battle line was going to be pretty basic. So I started with the extra two units, because I wanted to have five units in total, because I wanted to have at least eight units in total, so I could take either two KO units or two Stormcast Eternals, because you've got to have one in four can be those, because they're coalitioned, right? So I knew that I had to max out my battle line, and then you can have two further units in battle regiment. So I looked at all the things that weren't battle line and how much you know, point for point we could get basically. And I landed on 10 Judicators with Bolt Storm crossbows and 6 Sky Wardens. Lovely, lovely, lovely. They do. What really surprised me is the Judicator Bolt Storm crossbows are fantastic. They do 0.0280 wounds per point, which is much better than practically everything else. mm-hmm. Other than Bliss Barb archers, by the way, Bliss Barbs are fucking bonkers for their wounds per points ratio. It's like 0.037. So it's significantly good. But anyway, that's another conversation. And they were much better than the other Stormcast options. Because they're similar to the crossbows that are you know, the hurricane crossbows, they're similar to those.
The Raptor ones, you mean, the long strike?
More wounds, and so they're better defensively, but they're much better than the long strike ones pound for pound. They're much better than the sky bolts pound per pound. So I definitely wanted a unit of 10 of those. Now in Tempest Eye, you've got an ability to a command point allows you to run and charge, and you get run and shoot, and you get plus one to your run rolls as well. So that is my one unit that is going to be making use of the command point to run and still be able to shoot. So now I need to find four other units that don't have to rely on the run and shoot command ability. And then, yeah. Funnily enough, Sky Wardens have got a wound per point ratio of 0.026 if you give them Sky Hooks. Sky Hooks do more damage than drill cannons, even though the drill cannons do 3 mortal wounds on a 6 to hit, which is another thing I found out from this hammer sight. It's really good for checking if your unit's got different options for weapons, checking which one's the most efficient into the problem you're trying to solve. And in this case, it was Sky Hooks. And then that leaves me my three other units, and Free Guard Outriders can run and shoot on their War Scroll. Lovely, lovely, lovely. You can get Dark Shards with a Sorceress. The Sorceress has got a command point that allows you to make the Dark Shards run and shoot. And they've got a very good wound to point ratio of 0.257. But then you've got to have them, to get any sort of real value out of them, you've got to reinforce them twice. And I've already reinforced the Sky Wardens and the Judicators. So I settled on the Free Guild Outriders for a number of reasons. Firstly, I don't have to have a Sorceress, which is additional points, which lowers your efficiency. And secondly, I'm not spending any resources to allow these guys to run and shoot, which I think is key. So there's 20 outriders in two units of 10. The reason we're going for a 10 and a 10 there rather than a 15 and a 5 is that if I'm playing into Seraphon, I want to be able to shoot various different units into Bastillodons so that I can try and break their brackets. And then you get more and more value out of when you shoot as they lose their wounds. I know Seraphon weren't particularly my the initial goal, right? But again, I started sort of thinking to myself, actually, this is pretty good. So I'm going to see if I can make it, you know, good into other things. And then we've only got one space left, which is the free guard crossbowmen, because for 100 points, they'll sit back on an objective. They've got a 24-inch range, so they don't need to rely on moving forward and shooting, and you probably want something protecting your backfield. So that gives us the core of the army. The general obviously has the Hawkeye, and the best piece probably in the Cities of Sigmar range is the Hurricanum, to give all those units plus one to hit. Maybe not all of them if they can't all get within the bubble, but a significant amount of them. So we're not having to use command points to give them plus one to hit. And it's a nice big base to get the Hawkeye buff onto all those units to give them plus one to wound. So that's plus one to hit, one to wound on the vast majority of your army. I've given it Celestial Visions because we're probably going to be pretty command point thirsty, certainly if we're making things run and shoot, giving them all out attack if they're outside of the hurricane and bubble, etc. And Patrician's Helm, is that how you say that? And that's the one that, because Nighthaunt are a thing, that makes you immune to bravery, which you fucking need right now, right? And then there's not too many, once you get to that point, there's a lot of points left. And we're struggling, because we've used all our reinforcement points, we're struggling to, I thought I was going to then fill out the rest of the army with characters. And I did I looked at the characters that shoot, which is the Justicar in Stormcast, Brock in KO, and the guy in the dribble suit. And their ratios, I discovered, were really, really poor. They're like, the Justicar, for example, does 0.0136 wounds per point, which is terrible, you know, when you compare it to other units. So I thought, well, I don't want to put any of my resources into these characters because they're really, really inefficient. And I don't think the game needs characters quite as much as it used to from the scenario. Perhaps I'm wrong.
I definitely agree.
Okay, cool. So I don't want to put any of my resources into something that's fucking inefficient. So KO, luckily, I haven't used a second unit yet. I was going to have a second unit of Sky Wardens. But then when I saw that I had all these points, I just thought, fuck it, I'll see what an Ironclad does. And an Ironclad with innate plus one to hit, plus one to wound, means that 490 of your points can be at an efficiency of 0.0217. But also what the Ironclad will allow you to do is jump anywhere and take the Sky Wardens with it. I think that's right, isn't it? So yeah. You've now got an army. The Free Guild Outriders have got a 39-inch threat range. The Justicars with bolt crossbows have got a 33-inch threat range. The Skywarden and the Ironclad can jump anywhere and fucking, you know, kill the world. And the Hurricane itself moves 10, 13 inches, and it's got an 18-inch reach with it. So it's another 33 inches with its... With its shooting attack. The problem here, though, is at this point we're only 7 units, and we need 8 units to be able to have 2 KO units in the list. So there's 70 points left. So I had a quick whiz through looking at things. I thought I probably want some sort of hero to dish out command points, etc. And there's a 70 points for a Cogsmith, which rounds out the list to sort of 2,000 points. So that gives me. And then when I looked
at it, couldn't be a purple sun.
Yeah, it could have been. Well, I was thinking as well, this is probably a good teams list, and purple sun's better off in a different faction, right? So this to me, I think, would be quite a good teams list, because it doesn't use any of the particularly popular items like arcane tome, doesn't use purple sun. It's just what it does is it deploys super deep, and it can hit anywhere on the table with massive amounts of force with a lot of reliable damage. And then you run the stats and you do roughly 40 wounds to a 4-up, 5-up save. I appreciate that one of those Nurgle Flies units is probably going to be a 3-up save with all out defense. But that's what you hit with the Celestial Hurricanum, you know. And included in these stats there, those 40 wounds, the Hurricanum's damage wasn't present.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to be doing, and that is 5 flies dead. But if you factor in one of those units is going to have all out defense, then it's likely 4 flies dead, isn't it? But I think that's pretty devastating. If you took, I don't think many Magickin players are used to losing 4 of their flies in a turn, are they? Most of them aren't low drop or one drops either. So you're going to get the choice to deploy super deep. Hopefully they might not be able to get you. They can move 8, can't they, before the game, to move another 8. So what's that? 8?
So you can do 28 back.
28.
And you just go, okay, you can run at the guns then, flies.
Yeah, yeah. Then, well, one of those Justicars on a stand and shoot, unleash hell, fucking brilliant.
Yeah, especially with the Hurricanum to build the +1 back in, yeah.
Yes.
And if you have damn terrain as well.
Yeah, I went down this path and I thought, fuck, this is decent. This is a good way to build lists.
I'm glad.
And then if we look at how much damage that would do to a Nighthaunt player, that's 40 wounds through a 4-up, 5-up save. That's all 30 of those Bade Ghasts gone that you were mentioning earlier, Simon.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's another 10 wounds on, you know, Lady Alinda or something. Because if they cast them up in the middle, like you see most Nighthaunt players, this list can reach out and touch all of that, no problem at all.
Yeah.
You can deploy so super deep that you can afford to give away the first turn. Yes, they might get in, but well, they can't even Mystic Shield a unit, can they? Because they're ethereal. So this does. And then on a double, you've done 80 wounds to a Nighthaunt list. It's probably game over, isn't it, on the double?
Yeah.
And that's a sign of a strong list. Any list that can really leverage a double turn is something that I want, because I want the game over. I want the opportunity to end the game turn 2, turn 3, just when it's done and dusted as much as I can. So, A, so I can get to the bar. But more importantly, if all their stuff's dead early on, then they can't get back into the game. So my mistakes that naturally happen in a game aren't as costly if the game's over.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Simon, that was my homage to how I think you approach this.
What do you think, Simon?
I think that's really well put together and kind of well put. I'll definitely do exactly that kind of approach. Like, okay, well, is this better than this? Because there's loads of decisions that you don't need to make. You can just evaluate which one is better, exactly as you say. And having overspill wounds is really important, because you can then say, okay, well, if I don't hit the bit of the distribution, because loads of units are in like discrete chunks, right? You know, if I don't hit 2 flies dead, well, one's going to heal and then they're going to roll a 6. They're going to try hard to rally and stuff like that. So, yeah, definitely. That's exactly actually how I would kind of.
Oh, there you go. Good job, Darren.
One last point I wanted to make there as well with people that use sort of stats hammer. When you're comparing units, you might think, if I'd have just gone, oh, Dark Shards have got 0.026 and Free Guild Outriders have got 0.0242, let's say. Oh, I'll take the Dark Shards. You don't just don't compare lists. Think of it in the context of your list as a whole, because taking the Dark Shards would have meant that I'd had to use a command point, would have meant that I'd had to get a Sorceress in there. And then then I wouldn't have been able to get the Sky Wardens in, or perhaps the Ironclad or something else. But when you're assessing how much damage your army does, write the entire list and take it into consideration and see how many wounds it does. Because when I tried to write, I did initially put the Dark Shards in, and I came out with, I think, 38 wounds rather than 40 on average.
Yeah.
Even though they on paper, they're the, if you just compared them to Outriders, you would see that the Dark Shards were the more efficient unit. So don't just think of efficiency.
Definitely.
On a unit basis, think of it in a list context as well. And then the next stage of this is to actually sit down and put it on the table and see how difficult it is to maneuver around the Celestian Hurricanum. But I've got pieces that I can throw away as well. You know, the Free Guild Crossbowman, the Cogsmith, the 10 Free Guard Outriders, for example. So I've got some decent units that you could use as a screen if you do come up against a list that's as aggressive as this one is also a one drop. So I think it's got some play other than just going first and creaming people. Oh, sorry, going second and creaming people.
Yeah.
I've spoken enough now.
No, I think I think it's nicely, it's a really good point to touch on in terms of like, okay, well, what's the slight percentage gain here? Like, there's a point at which you're able to sacrifice a little bit of efficiency for freestandingness. As a con, like, you know, this unit needs nothing else to function.
Yeah, yeah.
And not only do you, if you're evaluating the Dark Shards fairly, have to cost in the Sorceress, which then drops their you know, output per point dramatically, it's also a thing they can kill. Going back to your earlier point about, I want a list that can blow up key pieces. If they've got stuff in there that you can kill and it knocks their efficiency out, well, rather than have to kill 30 Dark Shards, I've just got to kill a 5-wound Sorceress.
Yeah. Exactly that.
Yeah. But thanks, Darren. That was great. And what I was going to say is that if Darren and Simon don't mind, we will post both these lists on so you can have a look as we're talking about, or as Darren and Simon are talking about.
I'll send it to you now. The only thing I'm sad is I can't get a Triumph in there, but you can't have it all.
I was going to talk about the Triumph, actually, Darren. That was the one thing that came up in my thoughts on it, was that I really like, at the point where you had 70 points left, a lot of people would maybe chuck in a cheap spell like a Burning Head and then go for that Triumph. But I actually really like the fact that you've kind of mitigated against the need for the Triumph. Personally, obviously, I might be wrong here, but, you know, Patrician's Helm, giving you the Battleshock immunity for your castle. You don't need the +1 to wound because you're Hawkeyed on your key units. And then you don't need to reroll charges because you just fucking shoot everything.
Exactly that.
Right. Simon.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Sorry, Owen, were you going to say another point? Sorry, Owen.
No, I'm just sat here just learning. I feel like a listener tonight, so this is great.
Oh, it's all right. We're coming straight to you after Simon, don't you worry. Simon, your Darren list.
Yeah, so I tried to think about how Darren approaches kind of the game, and I thought about it after work this evening, so I kind of put it together quite quickly, but I just thought, like, what does Darren like? And was pleased to hear him say some of the same themes that I'd kind of guessed, which is, you know, ability to reach out and touch stuff, and ability to do things to kind of take out the key support behind your opponent's army, and not to worry too much about exactly having X thing to definitely do this every time, and instead having a couple of like flexible little units that can do a couple of different jobs and you're not super worried about them. And so I put together, because it's Darren, it has to have the prime. 100% has to, and like that's only half a meme, right? Because the prime's a great unit for something that comes down and definitely does what you point it at doing every turn, is really good value. And he's tough in the new, I couldn't believe when I first saw the new Stormcast rules.
I couldn't either.
It's like gains 4+ wards, and I was like, what?
It's
really brilliant. And they're like, oh, well,
and it can heal.
it can still recover, and it's like, well, maybe we'll put his points up by 15 and give him a 4+ ward, and you're like,
nah.
Okay.
Sounds great to me. Yeah, it sounds great, personally.
So I'll put it in Stormcast, and the kind of the rest of the details about what kind of storm host and stuff followed later from what I was able to kind of fit in. But I thought, well, if we have the prime, then we're in already like a long range kind of sniping mortal wound army. So what's good at that kind of thing? Well, the Slan is actually really good at that. It has Comet's Call on the War Scroll, and it already has +1 to cast. And then it also combos quite nicely with the Everblaze Comet that Stormcast, and it's very expensive. But when you actually read the rules, you're like, Jesus Christ, when that lands, that is like a lot of damage. Like, that's really quite...
10-inch bubble is excellent, isn't it?
Ten inches of pure mortal wound.
Even on a 1, you still do a mortal wound, I think. So when it goes down, when it goes down, mortal wounds are happening. So it's like, again, like guaranteed. And it's 36-inch placement, so it's outside of Unbind range. So it's like, okay, well then you can have a prime, you can have a Stormcast Wizard doing the Everblaze, and you can have a Slan. So that's a lot of then like chip damage, mortal wounds, area of effect stuff going into their army.
And you mentioned earlier the Slan can unbind the Comet.
Exactly. He's really nice with the Everblaze because he doesn't need to be in 30 inches to get rid of the Comet. So he can stay far away and take off the Comet with his natural +1. And then I was like, okay, well, what else goes well in here? Well, in the Stormcast Wizards, having one that's quite like fast is probably quite useful. And I've got a lot of elite stuff here. So the Lord Arcanum with his spell that heals D3, or if you cast on an 8+, I think it heals D6. Mm-hmm. It's really nice if you've got stuff like the Prime engaging in kind of a long range kind of fight. And then a Star Drake is actually a really good shape there as well.
Keeps someone alive as well, the Arcanum, doesn't he? If one dies,
Exactly. So if they kill the model, like with a if an attack kills the model, instead it comes back to life on one wound, and then you've got healing ready to go on it immediately afterwards. So it's a really nice way to kind of like hold back. And the Star Drake is, I mean, that's great on a Star Drake for one, but it's also +1 to cast, which combos makes the Slan +2. And you can have the Lord Arcanum as well, his mount trait, making everybody around -1 to unbind him, which is effectively another +1 to cast. So he's also kind of at +2, and obviously you just take Master of Magic and Arcane Tome because they're the best and Darren takes the best. And then I was like, okay, so once you've got that, what can you fit? And the answer is like, not terribly loads. You've got like 500 points or so. But what's quite nice are those Stormstrike Chariots. They do a lot of mortal wounds on the charge. Like, you know, they basically get the Stonehorn charge and they cost a third of the price and they have 12 wounds and a 3+ scroll save.
They finish what the Slam, etc. start, right?
Exactly. And they're -1 to hit on the charge. And you can put Mystic Shield on it because you've got cast for days. You're not pushing anything else in. And then it's very hard for them to get rid of without spending their whole turn just killing like a chariot that's in their base. And you're kind of happy if they do that.
You're happy if it eats an Unleash Hell to get your Star Drake in, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And then even if you kill it, it doesn't matter because before you Unleash Hell, I do my Ogre Charge.
And you might be able to keep it alive because of the Arcanum.
And when you do kill it, it blows up on you as well.
That's why the Holy Command is Final Thunderstrike, which is when that happens, you do it on 5s instead of 6s. You've got a 13 dice one from the chariot alone.
Oh, that's great.
Or you can do a 19 dice one from the Star Drake if they finally kill it.
I like it. Yeah, so
kind of lots of ways to do damage to people when they weren't expecting it or when they think it's all done. You're like, no, here's another bit more. And you've got Rain of Stars from the Star Drake at like 30 inches. It's the only thing that needs all that attack. So that'll be 2s and 2s.
Lots of ways to reach people. I also like the fact you put a Slan in because I think that's a very good include in Stormcast because you get the command point generation.
I was going to say, you'll get the extra CP.
Slans are like one of the best war scrolls in the game.
100%. And it pays for itself.
Yeah, you get five CPs a game. You get Comets cast every turn. You get board wide unbinds at +1.
Fucking
the Star Drake makes people -1 to cast, and so does the Comet if they don't get rid of it. So -2 to cast and 3 board wide unbinds at +1. Like, that's turning off most magic. And then for battle line, you've got like 5 Vindictors because they've got a 3+ save and you can afford them. And 3+ scroll saves are really good. And then 2 units of Vanguard Hunters, which is why I picked Astral Templars as their thing. So no Monstrous Rampages is quite nice. You can never be roared and lose your all-out defense.
Mm-hmm.
But also, they are like tree revs for Stormcast.
Yeah, I really like the Hunters. They're great.
They barely cost any more points than tree revs, and they do barging through and desecrate enemy lands immediately for 5 free points every game. And if you don't, like, if you need, you can kind of screen and do stuff with them, or, you know, whatever. And they're also good for the grand strategy, take what's theirs. Because that's have more units in enemy territory at the end of the game than they have in their own territory, if that makes sense.
It's what I had as well, Simon, and it's based on stats for you because I saw some stats to say 50% of games are won with take what's theirs and the other 50% are basically Tome's own grand strategies. Yeah. So that's why I picked that purely off stats. That's my one point I missed.
It's really good from first principles because what you have to do to stop someone scoring it is keep stuff alive and then keep it away from where the objectives are and away from where the rest of the opponent's army is.
And in your territory, right?
So yeah, exactly. They have to keep
points of engagement are over your objectives and not your opponent's.
Exactly.
Over their objectives rather
than... Yeah, exactly. So if you're doing your plan, which is basically kill all of their stuff anyway, they don't have any stuff to stop it with. And if they want to try and stop it, then they don't play the mission. So really... nice, you know, they see the Vanguard Hunters and they, oh, I've got to keep 3 units alive and in my territory Otherwise, that's 3 extra points for you for free at the end of the game. Mm.
I like the hunters as well. There's just that extra little bit of chip as well, because they've got the little pistols, right?
Yeah, two shots. Yeah, 2 shots each. Yeah.
If you've done your battle tactics with them, you can have your free kind of 20 shots with them into little hero or little bit of, because you've done a lot of hero phase damage and a lot of like out of phase stuff. Mm. You're like, okay, there's a few holes in screens. I'm just going to fire a pistol through here or something, you know. So you've got like a few different kind of chippy bits, but fundamentally it's like the prime and a big star. Oh, and on the Star Drake, I've got the Luck Stone. So I've got a command entourage. And then, so he's like a backup prime. So he also can do a guaranteed charge once per game of 12 inches.
Oh, no, really?
Nice.
Yeah, so it's a Stormcast artifact that lets you, for that hero, rig. Loads of people used to use it on like a Knight Venator or Adjudicators. It rigs like a wound roll.
Mm.
But it also lets you rig a charge roll.
Yeah, you can put it on a...
Yeah, of course.
I played against it on a Draconis. Yeah, it's good on a Draconis.
You can put it on a Draconis. You can have a prime and a proxy prime with a Draconis doing the same thing.
And then you have Scions of the Storm, so it starts off the board. So if you need, it can come in and guarantee a charge, and the prime does the same.
Oh, that's in your opponent's head.
And then if you don't, you can kind of set that up last, because you're like, well, have you screened it? And in that case, it's a massive casting buff for me anyway. Or if you've not, then I'll put it in your army and you're at -2 to cast from the get-go.
I love that as well, Simon, because you've made them castle up to screen off for these off-the-board threats, and then you just fucking commit them. You know, then you damage them as well. So.
You're punching them up and then you're commiting them. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Disgusting.
Nice. Then,
I used to do that with Croak and Rippers that could come down within 3 inches of you. So it forced people to castle. And then that's when Croak just hit, you know, everything within 50 inches to D3. And I just loved that synergy. It really forces them to castle. So the fact that you can recreate that from a list that I've used 5 years ago, I'm very, very pleased about.
Well, you used to be able to ally in the Everblaze Comet into Seraphon.
Yeah, yeah.
You do, like, and then was like, I don't know if I remember the really dark days of TTS, Seraphon, and 80-point Salamanders and all of that. Mm. But you could have, like, about like all of the kind of AoE mortals, because you could get, like, a Lord Exorcist and a Prime in, like, old Stormcast money.
Yeah, and you get plus one to cast from the as well.
So that was, like, in my head, and I was like, oh, I wonder if there's anything you can do, but if you make it more Stormcasty, and plus I know Alex loves dragons, so any list with a Star Drake in.
I appreciated it. Thanks. That was lovely. Thank you, both of you. That was really useful. I hope listeners have found that useful, just to see the process, whether or not they like the list or not. I personally really enjoyed the process of seeing how your crazy genius minds work to get to that end point. So thank you, both of you. And as I said, we will post that on our Twitter feed. As time's getting on, I think what we'll do, we'll just do a bit about biggest mistakes and important tips before we get onto Darren's favourite section and right at the end. So, Owen, be doing lots of listening.
Yes.
One big mistake and one big tip for our listeners on list writing that you have.
Oh, wow. God. Big tip would be just listen to what these two guys just said again, because that was pretty amazing.
I agree.
I would say my big tip would be lean into your friends. Like, you get loads of good advice, you know, sharing stuff around. And, you know, I often lean on people like Darren, and Simon's helped me with lists. Like, Simon, we were talking recently about the Sylvaneth, and you were like, Owen, Sylvaneth can't take a double turn. It has to be one drop. Don't fuck about. Sylvaneth's a one drop. That's the way it goes. So I would definitely, you know, lean into your, you know, friends who are better than you at this sort of thing, and get their advice, or join a Patreon or something like that. Maybe
if we know about one, yeah.
And then my big mistake early on was, like, again, thinking about wanting all of these like synergistic combos. Like, don't create lists which rely on too many steps. You know, we are playing in a game where you need to guarantee these battle tactics. So it's nice to have a combo, but like, if you've got something that requires too many things lining up, it's not going to happen every game, you know, 5 rounds. You're not going to be able to, even if you've got your +2 to cast and then this is there and that's there, you know, you need to come up with a plan that you feel, and a list that's going to operate in all the missions, and doesn't yeah, from a starting point, doesn't require too many steps to go right. Because I played for years, well, a year with Sylvaneth, where if you didn't cast Throne of Vines on the first turn, it was kind of downwards from there, you know, because you need to get that off to get your plus two, and then it rolls from there. So, yeah, but I just basically write something and go Leo or Darren or whoever.
Yeah.
What do you think of this? So, yeah, speak to people. Even just post, like, tweet stuff out. You know, like, I see people tweeting out lists and being like, you know, tag in people that you like and see, like, you know, if you haven't got mates that you trust with list writing, then just tweet out and ask for advice. I think we're a very open community like that, aren't we? So, yeah, yeah. That would be my advice.
Great. Thank you very much. Darren, biggest tip and biggest mistake?
Biggest mistake I think people make is thinking that it requires a lot of intelligence, and it is, you know, you need to be super clever to write a good list, and then it puts you off trying. Simon's very, very clever. I don't want to sort of include him here, but I'm not blessed with a massive amount of intelligence. But I fucking, if you want to get better at list writing, just fucking write lists. Write lists. All day long. Write fucking lists all
day
long.
Quit your job. Write some lists. Don't speak to your family. Just write the lists.
It's the same as anything. You want to get better at something, then fucking do it. Like, it's not rocket science. And don't just write when a new tome comes out and you don't have any fucking interest in it whatsoever. Get involved. Read that fucking tome and write some fucking lists. And you'll understand so much more. And then once you've written your lists, imagine using them. Imagine, see them on the table, you know, think about your and then you'll, if you can imagine how they sit on the table and you think to yourself, fuck, if I don't have enough screens here, then you can go back and you can tweak it before you get to the table and find out that you didn't have enough sort of shit. So just don't think it's not fucking rocket science, and you can write, you can get better at list writing by simply doing it. And what was the other thing? So that's a top.
That was the tip and a mistake.
Oh, and a tip and a mistake. Yeah. Believe in yourself. Get it done.
Yeah. Perfect. Simon, tip and mistake.
So I think I might say for the top tip, kill your darlings, would be my advice. So if you have a thing that you love, but it just doesn't stack up, or you've played with it and you think, oh, but it, in theory, if this comes off and this comes up, then it's cool to, like, you know,
yeah,
take it out of the list.
Yeah.
Give it a game. Give it a chance. I'm playing a Nighthorn list at the moment. I love the idea of a Linda in it. I think in theory, if it works, it'll be like perfect, because you just bring back my ghosts and you have so many, you know. But if it doesn't work, she's out, and I'm going to spend 340 points on something else. And that's just sometimes the way to do it. So don't become emotionally invested in, like, a combo that you've thought up, because sometimes, and it happens to everyone, it just doesn't work, and you and you just do the next thing.
Get over yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And then biggest mistake.
Can I just jump in very quickly there? Yeah. Just, I like that point, because a lot of the football podcasts are saying this very same thing about, you know, football teams and how lots of teams have got better after an important player has gone, because that player didn't fit in for whatever reason. And so actually don't get attached too much to one thing. If it doesn't work, doesn't work. Move on. So, I really like that as a top tip. Sorry to interrupt. Please, your mistake.
No, it was great.
So I think a mistake a lot of people make, and this will sound like a bit weird maybe, but is if you're going to netlist, don't change things because you think it will work better that way. If you're netlisting from somebody that's just won or done really well, and you're like, you know, they have probably, in putting the list together, thought about all of the variations that you were thinking about and discarded them for one reason or another. So start by playing it exactly as is, at least once or twice, before you then think, okay, well, how do I put my own flavor onto this? If nothing else, so you can do that. There's really great players in the UK, and a lot of what they'll kind of start with is they'll see a list that wins, they'll start playing it, and I've done this in the past as well, and don't change a thing for a few games. Then once you've figured it out, then you can put your own flavor on it and think, well, actually, I'd prefer this hero instead of that hero, I'd prefer this as a screen instead of that as a screen. But a big mistake is to think, oh, well, I know they've just gone 5-0, but surely it's better if...
That's the net list, Simon. That's the shame of taking the net list. We immediately want to not be a net list. But I agree with you.
So it's the same as Darren said, in a way, like, get over yourself. Because if you're taking 10 dragons and you say, well, instead of Master of Magic, I've got something else, that's not net listing. You know, you'd have to change like such a significant amount. And also, nobody cares. Nobody cares if you're like taking a list that they've seen before.
Yeah.
It's good. You're there to win. Don't worry.
Good thing's good. Good thing's good.
Definitely.
Cool. Right. Brilliant. So just after all those amazing tips from all of you, we've got our last section, and I must say, what an absolutely fantastic response to our last section. So, Darren, take it away.
The misplays!
I think that was louder than the plays one. Oh, my ears just suddenly blew up.
A much bigger response for the misplays than we have the plays, haven't we?
So yeah, I will say, absolutely.
People want to show how silly they are rather than how clever they are, which is a nice reflection of the community. Well done.
I love this. And thank you to everybody that actually, instead of the plays, which can be a bit, not arrogant, because people want to show what they did well, but the misplays response is great. We've had so many absolutely fantastic people just happy to share when they've done fucked up, basically. Perfect. All right, Owen?
Oh, God, I haven't read any of them, I'm afraid. I've got two things to say on the matter, though.
All right, go for it. Yeah, go on.
One would be listen to episode 2 and you might hear a story about a big Krondis dragon that got you all wet. That was a misplay. Actually, to be fair, I could probably it's not really a grand misplay. I did misplay at the tournament in America recently, and it went to what one of the things that Simon was talking about earlier in terms of being far too regressive in my deployment and giving my opponent too much of the board, and the idea of I didn't have a plan outside of put my screens up, give him first, because then he did exactly what Simon said, which was he came into me, he rushed me, he blew up some of my stuff, I couldn't kill enough back, and then he won prio on a drawn 5. So, that would be my recent misplay. But I would say, you know how I like to talk about things in... I like to step away and talk about things in bigger perspective sometimes. I would just say on the idea of misplays, often I've focused too much historically maybe on like, this one thing went wrong, or I gave up this character, or I charged that unit. But I think talking in America with Rob as we traveled around quite a bit, we were talking about the micro and the macro. And I think that I need to improve on my play in terms of the macro. So sometimes without decent amount of reflection post game, I don't think you realize you fucked up until you really think about how that game played out. And again, talking about that game that I recently lost, I think my sort of overarching point would be don't focus too much on like, oh, I bloody forgot to screen my great unclean one and he got banged off in one turn, or I don't know, I deployed everything off the board and then my opponents zoned everything out and nothing came on. I would say like think about the
that one's pretty bad though.
Yeah,
if you lose your whole army in deployment,
I mean that's a good point there, because a lot of them were about not zoning out properly and losing whole armies before they've even done anything, or forgetting stuff's in the sky and then it never comes down because it's all destroyed. So there are a lot of those. So
we've got a deployment episode. Anyone can
on
that. Just have something written down. If you have like a score sheet, write down your units in the sky on your score sheet.
Definitely Nurgle players need a Nurgle token for their Nurglings, because they have to come down turn one. And the amount of times where I've been like, go on then, bring them down. You know, it's turn two, but, you know, you forgot your bloody Nurglings again. Like, you're right, Simon. I think like a big token or something to remind. But, yeah, I would just say on misplays, don't focus too much on this single thing and blame it. You know, like people come away going, oh, I lost turn 3 prior, or I had shit dice when I finally committed. I would say that you can misplay from on a macro sense on your overall strategy. So you need to focus on that. That's what I'm trying to work on more.
That makes sense.
It's still great when you do really well as well. But I think a lot of people focus on their misplays and then it negs them out for the future games. When you're telling people about your games between rounds, because we all do it, hi, how did your game go? I don't care. This is how my game went. You know, don't just tell people about all the terrible things that happened. Tell them about the stuff that you did right. Just keep yourself in a positive mind space.
Headspace. Simon, do you have any? Did you manage to see some of them?
So I didn't get to see too much on Twitter, but I can offer one of my own.
Yep.
And so this is a recent tournament I was at in Bournemouth, and it was table one, and it was the Lurkers Below, and it was against Max's beautiful Archaon army. And I was thinking about his list, and I was like, okay, well, I've got Sylvaneth, and you know, Lariel can blow up plenty of Varangard, and when I put everything in, Tree Song, he can't spell ignore it, so I can get rid of Archaon or cripple him and sort that out, so that's fine. It's long ways, so I can maintain a lot of distance, so I think I'll be okay. And Max is three drops, and I'm one. Well, Max goes first, my telling him to go first, then he pushes up, and it's fine, and then I kind of shoot some stuff, and it's fine. Archaon throws himself in the middle of my lines and fails a charge, and I'm like, okay. And then Max goes again. The cup said he went again. You know, the ever-chosen four. And he killed a load of bow hunters, didn't quite kill them all, you know, and I was like, okay, this is fine. I've got, you know, ways to put models back in. This is all right. I can blow Archaon mostly up, end of turn two. All right, so I've there's a bunch of chaff left, but Archaon's basically dead. I've got three turns left to win the game. And then Max goes, okay, well, turn three prior, I've got it. So Archaon just retreats onto your objective, and I auto win.
That must have hurt you. You're a ridiculous gamer.
That will never happen to me again. Thank you very much for that. Because it was right at the start of 3.1, and I can blame it on not remembering the mission very well. And it will never happen again. But honestly, I was just literally, he's just like, yes, yeah, so if I just retreat, and I literally, and Lariel had gone in, and I'd struck and faded, so she was on the mark, and then she wasn't. I only had three wounds left, you know. I was like, okay, this is all fine. I mean, even if Archaon had died, right, I've let him get to a board position where he then just floods the whole board, my objective anyway. So Archaon living and dying is irrelevant. My strategy was wrong. It's like that macro thing. It was not, I didn't do the last three wounds. It was bottom of turn two. I had to take the middle objective. So Max's next go, he couldn't take my home and instant win. And I just totally forgot that. I was like, yeah, tree revs go down there, do break, do barging through. Yeah, then I'll do desecrate. So I'm really up on battle tactics. Great. And he's just like, yeah, turn three, I'll win.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You outthought yourself.
I just didn't properly keep my eye on what I actually had to do to win, which was not take his army apart piece by piece with lovely Sylvaneth non-engagement NPE, but was stand on the right marker at the right time.
Yeah. Nice. I like that. I like that a lot. Darren?
I've got a couple from here and then a couple of my own.
Yeah.
I've got one from Timber on the little thread that we put out, the Gnome's Bane. I quite like this. So he had Manfred with a wide open charge lane, and he had some chip he'd already taken some chip damage. So he had his Gatebreaker, and he went, best day ever, bring it down, got Flaming Weapon up, brilliant, charged into Manfred, and at that point he realised and remembered, and he was on an objective. So charged off the objective to go kill Manfred. And it's at that point he realised that Manfred can just fuck off. And he fucked off onto the objective.
That he just left.
So know your foe is the lesson there.
Yeah.
Another one that I was involved with. This is from Laurie. Laurie, bless him. There was a... The Hans Hammerers. Shout out to those chaps. Fine chaps. They run like the odd one dayer. And I was thinking to myself, I'll go to this one day. It's a local club, you know. I'll take myself a nice, a friendly list because it's just going to be full of loves. And I walk through the door, and fucking Steve Curtis and Laurie Huggett Wild walk through the door, and I think, oh, bastards! There's going to be some difficult games ahead. Brilliant. So I ended up in this game against Laurie, and it was the what was the old character one where you had two objectives and you could only score if you had characters near them. It's the one everyone hated.
Duality of Death.
Yeah. So it was Duality of Death. Laurie had a one drop, and he had a Sylvaneth list that could go first, go up on the objectives, layer all these dryads with -1 to hit buffs, etc., and he put minimum resources on one flank, but then all of his army basically on the other one. And it's a very basic tactic. You know, you go up by two early, and then the rest of the game, you each get 1 point and you end up winning because you got that initial one. But he just made the there's no way he could lose this game, but he managed to beat himself. The mistake Laurie made, and it's in the thread, he moved up the Hurricanum to take the objective on the left that he had allied in, and he moved Illyrio up to protect it right next to it. And then he layered round his dryads. He had like 30 dryads, I think, around those two characters. And then in my turn, I was able to get some Wrathmongers. And this is a good sort of 4 years ago. So this is when Wrathmongers were really, really good. If something killed them in melee, you got to then attack with that model. So he put Illyrio within striking distance. So he hadn't put a big enough gap between his screen and Illyrio. So I managed to get my Wrathmongers involved in a combat with Illyrio. And he decided to attack the Wrathmongers. And I think this might have even been at a time where you didn't have to elect to attack. But Laurie, in his infinite wisdom, did. Obviously smashed up my Wrathmongers, and I went, okay, I'll get Illyrio to pile in or attack. She was right next to his Hurricanum, which was on the objective. He was like, oh shit. So it gets much better. He then rolled his beetle attacks and he got like one hit. And I was thinking, bastard, five attacks, fours to hit. You should get two or three. Okay. And he didn't even wound. Oh, bugger. And then he did his dwindling attack. You know, Illyrio did her dwindling attack.
Oh, no.
That did fuck all. So this hurricane, so big smile on Laurie's face. And then we remembered that Wrathmongers also have an aura of everyone gets plus one attacks at enemies as well. And he was like, oh, okay. He did his beetle attack, didn't do anything. Did his extra dwindling attack. It hit, it wounded, the Hurricanum failed its save, and the old rules for Illyrio were, if you roll over the opponent's wound characteristic, if it's taken a wound, it is slain. The wound characteristic of a Hurricanum is 11. Can you guess what that motherfucker rolled? It was the most satisfying football I have ever shouted. I didn't have the fucking honour around the sports hall. Everyone, it was a perfect moment where everyone stopped and looked and gasped at what was going on at our table. Laurie dropped to the floor. And you could have avoided that simply by moving Illyrio not so close to the Hurricanum, or, you know, long story short, Laurie basically beat himself, and I won the game from there.
Wow!
That's quite a good one. And then a couple of misplays myself, because I'm perfect at Warhammer. I don't really have any mistakes I've ever.
Brilliant!
Made.
Yep, brilliant.
So I'll tell you about a couple of things you shouldn't do before a tournament, let's say, or during a tournament. I was in my first Warhammer Age of Sigmar tournament at Warhammer World, and it was the first Age of Sigmar tournament I'd ever been to after rage quitting, and I'd had two games with this Sylvanith list and about five games of Age of Sigmar total, and game five I managed to get all the way up and play Ben Curry. But the night before, I'd been to Nottingham Rock City. Now, Hair of the Dog had managed to get me through my fourth game, which I think was Rustfield.
This isn't another knees story, is it, by any chance?
It's pretty close. And I was now living every part of my hangover. So I go up to the table, shake Ben Curry's hand. I think, oh, this is one of the names. And he was super confident. He was running the Stormcast list that was all up in the sky, came down and dropped whatever.
The Warrior Brotherhood.
Yeah, 20 protectors. He had quite a pervert choice, I think. He had the guys that throw javelins. They weren't so popular, I swear, but he really rated them.
The prosecutors.
Yes, yeah. Prosecutors. They dropped down. They actually did a surprising amount of damage. And I had about... considering it was my first Age of Sigmar tournament, I had a pretty cooked list. I had 18 hunters when they were super value, when they were like 180 points each. Because I didn't want to go to my first tournament and just lose. So I read through the Sylvanith army book and I thought, that's a fucking good unit. I'll just spam them. So it's quite a Simon Simon lists, I guess. You know, find the most efficient unit and spam it. Had a Tree Lord Ancient as well that had a 2-up rerollable save and Dreitcher, which I quite liked at the time, but other people didn't. But anyway, I'm at the table and I'm feeling rough, and I'm like, Ben, I'm just gonna have a nervous poo if you don't mind. So I fucked off to the toilet. And I get in the toilet, I sit down, I do my business. It's much more violent than I intend. It means that there's a splashback which wafts up. The aroma forces me to sneeze. It forces me to sneeze. Oh, I sneeze so hard, I then violently do what I was there to do again. But I also managed to piss a perfect stream through the gap between the toilet and the lid. And it goes all over my pants and my jeans. And because the second waft has now back up, that's made me want to vomit. So I then got to turn around and vomit, and I'm kneeling in my own pissy pants. I tidy myself up. I go back to bed. I play the entire game then in pissy pants. And the point is, the mistake that was made here was obviously don't spend too much time at Rock City. And throughout the game as well, my list was quite good into Ben's list, which he was quite surprised about. And early on, he was tweeting, oh, I think I'm going to lose. And as the game went on, his tweets were like, oh, fucking hell, I'm going to win, because I was playing so terribly because I was so hungover. I was doing things like charging my Tree Lord Ancient into Deadly Terrain, you know, and risking the one, which luckily I didn't. And Ben was kind enough to say, you don't have to do that. And I was like, no, it's my fault. And I was getting him to move models around for me. But he smashed me.
Hey, Darren, you say that you're not a smart guy, but you remember all of that from all that time ago. Like, I don't know.
I tell a good story. Have we got time for one more?
Or go do you not care? Yeah, no, go for one more, yeah.
I'll tell you about the first tournament I ever went to when I was 18. I was part of Battle Force Pompey, or at least I used to. I attended every so often, and they were going to a tournament. I don't quite know where it was, but I was 18, and the night before we stayed at the pub that the event was very close to, or perhaps the event was even there. And I got myself very drunk very quickly, and there was a chap there. I think his name was Paul. I remember he had glasses. And he said to me, I'll give you a fiver if you down this pint of Jack Daniels. And I said, oh, I don't want to. No, so I'll give you 40 quid if you down this pint of Jack Daniels. And I said, oh, no, I don't want to take your money. I'll take £5. Now, I then downed this pint of Jack Daniels. It's not as impressive as it sounds. Well, it doesn't sound impressive at all. It was full of ice top to bottom. So it's not quite as much Jack Daniels as you know, it wasn't an entire pint. But it meant that I was immediate. That's my last memory from the evening. Apparently, I was trying to buy the entire bar a drink. They had to put me to bed. When Pete, my hill, Rick and Chris's brother, he woke me up by slapping me. Apparently, I was blue. And I was using Savage Orcs at the time. And my first opponent was this Bretonian chap. And I spent the entire game with my head on my arms, and I allowed my opponent to move my army for me, roll all the dice. He obviously smashed me. And at the end of the game, I was thinking, oh, fucking hell, I really fucked up here. I went and got myself a cup of tea. There was this girl serving these cups of teas. They were a pound a time, but she gave me my tea for free, and she was quite flirtatious. And I was thinking, bloody hell, what's going on? I look like a right fucking mess. I went over and I told Pete, I've got free tea, Pete. I'm well happy. And he went, don't you remember last night? And I was like, of course I don't remember last night. What happened? He said, you and her were flirting the entire night. Turns out she's the daughter of the tournament organizer. So I look up and I see the tournament organizer. And it was, I can't remember his name. It was this chap. But he'd been giving me dodgy looks the entire morning. But he also had like a dodgy eye. It was smaller than his other one. So I just assumed it was, you know, it was part of his face, but it turned out he was giving me horrible looks the entire time. So the mistake there was obviously don't piss off the tournament organizer, because no decisions went my way that weekend.
And don't necessarily get paralytic drunk
I mean, it's fun. They make for good stories, and I got a fiver, right? So it's not all bad.
Very true. Very true. Right. I guess my two then to finish off. We will do this section again because we've got so many good ones. So
yeah, we did.
We're definitely going to keep going with this section because there's loads. The two I wanted to mention, I'll start off with so Mushroom Ming, who's at Thorn Shield on Twitter. This is from 8th edition fantasy. So for those of you that played it, you'll know what I'm talking about. And for those of you that didn't, there used to be something called railroading. And what some of the lists used to be, so some of the Bretonian lists, were you had a formation that was very narrow. So you had a frontage of three and it were very, very deep. So about five, six, seven columns. And a way of dealing with this, because in fantasy, you had to charge and do something called close the door. So when you charge something, you had to align your unit with their unit to complete the charge. And if you couldn't do that, you couldn't complete the charge. And so to combat these very long, very deep Bretonian trains, which were, they were called trains, you could put little units either side so that if you imagine when the unit tried to pivot, you've got this big, long rectangle. Well, you can't pivot because you've got these two units either side of you. And so all you do all game is move forwards and backwards. And that's all you do, all game, forwards and backwards, because you can't turn this huge, unwieldy thing because you can't pivot and hit another unit. And so that's called railroading. So you're railroading the train. And unfortunately for Ming, he railroaded himself. And he railroaded himself. It gets better with his own terrain, which he brought to the tournament by placing it in a certain place. He put his Bretonian train in place, ready to go, and then realized it couldn't turn all game, so just moved forwards and backwards.
He's playing a different game to us, isn't he?
Which I think is absolutely amazing. His opponent must have been, wow, like I don't actually need to do anything at all this whole game. So, yeah, thank you, Ming, for that. That was great. And then our final one, which I think is probably the greatest misplay of all time, which some people have seen on the Twitter thread, goes to at Ravman, or Craig, as he's better known. And all I'm going to say is he forgot to play a whole turn.
And the fucker still won.
And he still won the game. Look, I'm not going to give any more explanation than that because I think that's absolutely perfect.
I think if it's a game that I've heard about, he also played his whole army with only half as many wounds as it actually had. Yeah. And he still won.
That's what he wants.
So fantastic. Shout out to Craig. Thank you very much. You can forget a whole turn and still win Age of Sigmar. So absolutely perfect. So thank you very much. Gents, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much. Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Owen. And thanks, Simon, for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Simon. An honour. I've very much admired your list building expertise the entire time I've known you. So thank you.
That's right. It's been lovely to be on and to chat to you all. It's been really, really good fun. I'm glad any time. And I might well try that list, Darren.
Oh, please do. Yeah, I'd love that. I'll try yours.
Yeah.
We could play. Do you want to play that on TTS?
I was with you until you said TTS. I just...
If you're 24 hours, yeah. So, yeah, so thank you. Thank you to everyone. And thanks to all of you for... in your misplays, and do keep sending the misplays in. As I said, we'll do the next one. So our next episode will be regarding playing on stream. So about how you go about playing on stream with the popularity of streaming now with a certain special guest. So do send any questions you have into Darren or Owen or Simon or our Miscast Twitter feed, and we'll try and answer them. But thanks again. Be kind, look after each other, and we'll catch you all on the next episode. So cheers, bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.